Judy Collins joins us by phone tonight. She has gifted us with her voice for 50 years now. She's had a number of hit songs, won a Grammy, known and performed with all the major folk singers of the 60s and 70s, including Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell, as well as participating in both the civil rights and peace movements. She still tours extensively, nationally and internationally, and has performed here with the Cincinnati Pops. She tells us all about her life, its dramatic highs and lows, in her autobiography, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, which we're going to talk about tonight. I do want to begin by thanking you and telling you that you were the voice playing in the foreground of my life all during my coming of age years. And some while later, my daughter remembers your beautiful voice on the tape player every morning when we went to school, when I was driving her. So I want you to know there's no generation gap in our house.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. And welcome to Around Cincinnati. I want to start with the fact that there are so many interesting people in your life. One of the most fascinating was your father. So tell us a bit about him.
Well, amazing man. Born in 1910 on a dirt poor farm in Nez Perce, Idaho. He was blind by the age of 4 and became an incredibly fine musician, had a wonderful radio show for 30 years, raised 5 of us, died early of an aneurysm in 1968, unfortunately, at the age of 57, but had a wonderful life and was a great mentor, had his own problems. He was alcoholic, so that made it difficult, but he was a wonderful performer and a wonderful model for me, really.
Let's move forward to another interesting man in your life, because this is where the title of your book, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, comes from, and that's Stephen Stills.
The Stephen story, yes. Well, I met him in 1968. He was playing in a band that I was recording with, a new group that was new to me. Some of the other people were James Burton and Buddy Emmons, great pedal steel player, and Stephen Stills. He was between gigs, so to speak, because Buffalo Springfield had stopped and Crosby, Stills, and Nash was still in the future. And he and I had a big hot romance in 1968 in Los Angeles, and he wrote a song about me called Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, which, of course, became a huge hit. And a marvelous kind of romantic story, I think, for all of us, not just me. I have been friends with him for all these years. We somehow have maintained our friendship and our relationship over the years, which has been wonderful to do. We recorded something together a couple of years ago on one of my albums, Great Songs of Tom Paxton. Stephen and I have remained friends, even though I'm married to a wonderful man, and he and I and Stephen are good friends, and his wife is a good friend of mine. So those things are wonderful to be able to savor. You know, most of the people I've had any kind of relationship with, I'm still friendly with, and that's quite a triumph, I think.
Publicly, what we always saw of you was beautiful, touching, certainly poetic, also a great role model with your support of civil rights and peace movements. But behind the scenes, addiction to alcohol, divorce, loss of custody of your child, almost lost your voice at one point. What made it possible? What in you was there that kept you showing up? A lot of folks lost it in the 60s and 70s.
I have this kind of inner engine, and I guess it came from early training. One of the things about my father's illness, for instance, his alcoholism, was that he was a functioning, working alcoholic. I mean, I know that he never missed a show. He always got up and got through it, you know, whether he was hungover or not. The other day, I was trying to clear my throat and try to sing. I was so sick, I canceled 3 shows. I haven't canceled anything in about 25 years, so I was really sick. And I was clearing my throat and trying to get through the rest of my Carlisle dates, and I remembered my father and how he would get up and struggle to get over to the top again so he could go off and do his shows. He always showed up. He was always trying to figure out how to be better. And I think that was in part because he really had a good training as a kid. He was a very skilled musician, made sure that I got this training in my life, and I had to show up and do things in the same way. I had to perform. That's part of it. And we never stopped looking. We never stopped reading. We never stopped educating ourselves. My whole life, I figure, is this whole thing about being on the planet is to learn more, to be more surrendered, but to also be more aggressive in terms of what you want to learn and what you want to do. And I guess that little engine that keeps going chug, 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 I was always trying to figure out how I could do it better, you know, whether I started exercising, for instance, when I was in my 20s. I started reading books about spiritual matters. I tried looking into diets. And how did people stop eating? How did they stop drinking? How did they keep working when they were eating and drinking? Every kind of therapy and self-help book. I mean, I have a bookshelf filled with those things in addition to everything else that I read. And I'm addicted to books. So, you know, I'm sort of glad I have an iPad now. It means that I can travel without all that heavy weight.
Yes, yes.
I still prefer to read a book.
The common thread that ran through the book for me was there was no settling of old scores here, but rather kindness and gratitude kept coming up. And this book is dedicated to your mother. I wonder if that's...
Yes, your... my beloved mother. Oh, God, she was amazing. Somebody put a picture on my Facebook. One of my relatives who had one of these pictures of me when I was 6 years old. Well, I looked at the picture. I am so beautifully put together. My hair is done. My braids are done. I have this cute little outfit. My mother was amazing. She had 5 children. She was married to a blind man. She worked nonstop, day and night. She cooked. She sewed. She made all of our clothes. She took care of my dad. She drove him all over the country sometimes. I mean, she was totally remarkable. I've written a song about my mother called In the Twilight. She died in 2010 at 94, and I've written the song about her life, about the things in her life that were so spectacular, how she voted for Obama after all those years, how she remembered her family, how she was surrounded by her loving siblings and all of her loving family, how she, you know, worked at the museum as a docent, how she was in a book club for 40 years and read like mad. She read more Proust than I ever read. She traveled more places than I did. You know, I travel a lot of places. I never see them. I see the backstage in the airport, and that's about it. She is remarkable. And I am so grateful to my mother and my father who struggled so hard and who rose above his problems. You know, that's the key. This stuff that we go through is not personal. It's not personal. It's life on the planet. Get a grip. Find out a way to laugh about it. Get some help. I mean, that's what my mother taught me. I mean, she was as close to a Christian Scientist as she could be, being a Methodist and then a Unitarian. I appreciate my background. I appreciate those people who lived through the Depression and survived and thrived and knew about ethics and about loyalty and about gratitude. I'm so grateful that was in my life.
I have been told by some people that when we reach the pearly gates, we're treated to or perhaps embarrassed by a review of our life. And I'm thinking that writing an autobiography must be like a trial run of that. What did you come away with from this process?
Well, certainly the feeling that I'd been through fire and I'd been through pleasure and I'd been through agony and that I'd had all these things that I was given. I have a friend who says, you know, my problems are perfectly crafted for my growth. And I think that that's true. You know, the story of the rabbi who sends all of his parishioners out into the courtyard to put their problems, write them down and hang them on a tree, and then they can go around and choose the ones they want. And they wind up choosing their own problems because they don't feel they have any way to deal with anybody else's problems. I think that's the way it's structured. And I've always felt that way, you know, even when I was a child getting ill with polio and then later hepatitis and so on. And then, of course, even the alcoholism, I felt, oh, that's a challenge that was built for me personally. Mm-hmm. It's a privilege to be able to have something to get your hands around and try to do something about.
Yes. And thank you for doing it. Again, wonderful to talk with you tonight. We'll look forward to seeing you back in the Queen City sometime in the future.
I look forward to it.
Thank you, Judy.
Bye.
I've been talking with Judy Collins about her autobiography, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. You'll find more information about it at wvxu.org or around Cincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.